Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Sign of the times, General Motors, once called the mark of excellence, losing its dominance to Toyota. Our Labor Department securing a major settlement in New Jersey over safety and health violations. And today on the show, the iron workers in South Carolina and the United Labor Agency. Welcome to the Wednesday, January 5th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. Dan Segovia is going to be our first guest on the show today. He comes to us from the state of South Carolina, and he is an iron worker. Iron Workers Local 848, ironworkers848.org is their website. Dan is a 45-year-old father of four daughters and a grandfather to two granddaughters. Grew up in Northwest Indiana. Started his career off with the railroad industry as a welder. This was back in 94 in East Chicago. He moved to Charleston, South Carolina back in 2001, and that's when he entered into the apprenticeship program for the iron workers. He started working for the local just about 5 years ago, 2017, as the apprenticeship coordinator, and has held officer positions of recording secretary, president, and currently he is the business manager and the financial secretary treasurer. During his 20 years as an iron worker, he worked mostly industrial projects, but he says he's really proud of one thing, and that is the demolition of the old Cooper River bridges in Charleston, South Carolina, where they were able to set up charges for multiple implosions. That had to be a sight. And he was recently appointed to the North Carolina Offshore Wind Task Force by Governor Cooper's Department of Commerce. We'll talk about that. Offshore wind off the coast of the Carolinas, business development, organizing. That's one state that is the has the lowest density, union density, of any of the 50 states in the United States of America. It's just over 2%. And how many times we had Tom Buffenbarger on the show. Tom, of course, the former general president of the International Association of Machinists, saying that the former governor there, Nikki Haley, said, if you have a union company, we don't want you in the state of South Carolina. Go some other place. Go to some other state. Maybe they'll accept unions. We don't want any unions here. And that's primarily why Boeing set up shop there. So we'll talk about that anti-union climate, what they're doing to combat that, and obviously take a look at what the future holds. I want to drive you to that website again. It's ironworkers848.org, and there is a page on organizing. We got an opportunity. Go there and read it. They talk about what organizing is all about, why we need to organize, and I'm going to read part of it right now. The American promise is that if we go to school, work hard, and become a productive and faithful employee, we can then expect to support a family, raise and educate our children, enjoy a healthy and fulfilling life, and retire with dignity. We were not supposed to have to win the lottery or be a corporate executive to enjoy the American dream. Now, that was the vision of middle-class Americans who once modeled the image of what it was to be an American. The middle class is disappearing in direct proportion to the demise of the American union movement. After World War II, nearly 30% of our workforce belonged to unions. Today, barely half are organized. Today, a few own the world's resources while most live in poverty. Wages of $8 per hour are common. For most of these workers, there's no health insurance or retirement plans. The result? Taxpayers across the United States are making up for what employers should be paying with public assistance programs. And that is corporate welfare. Why are wages so low? Well, because that's the easiest way to increase profitability. The result? Today, the wealthiest 1% own as much of our nation as 90% of the rest of us. Corporate CEOs can earn 500 times the wages paid their workers. And that was not the case back in the 60s and early 70s. It was about 20, maybe 25 to 1. So the Post goes on to talk about why we need unions in America. And the freedom to form unions is a basic human right. And back in 1935, the U.S. government enacted the National Labor Relations Act that said employees shall have the right to form labor organizations, to bargain collectively, and employers may not interfere with. That's what happened in 1935. Well, it's been eroded since then, and there's a lot of good information on this website, like the 35 reasons to thank unions. Paid vacation, sick leave, Social Security, minimum wage. I mean, I could go on and on and on. And then the 35 things that your employer cannot do. I'll tell you, this is a great post, and I have to salute the ironworkers in the least unionized state in America for calling attention to what I just said. Again, this is Local 848. It's all posted on ironworkers848.org. Dave Meginhardt will be joining us later in the show. Dave is the executive director of the United Labor Agency, one of the many sponsors of America's workforce. We're going to touch on the Unsung Heroes Dinner, which took place in November. We'll run down some of the honorees. And again, I have to thank Len DeCosmo, who heads the North Coast Labor Federation, for filling in for me. I damaged my hamstring, and I just couldn't walk for a couple of weeks, and he filled in for me. Great guy, Len DeCosmo. He's been on the show many, many times. Dave's also going to get into the tight labor market and some of the possible reasons. There was some new information that came out yesterday. In November, there were 10.6 million job openings. In December, 12 million. 4.5 million people quit their jobs in November. That's 3% of the workforce. And most of them in low-wage industries like retail, leisure, healthcare. So the Great Resignation is still continuing in America. And Dave is going to get into that. He's going to speculate how long that's going to go and the opportunities that are available through the United Labor Agency. They do a lot with training. Get people into the jobs that can support themselves as well, their families. That's what people want. That's how the middle class became the middle class when you think about that. So Dave Meginhardt will button up the show right here on America's Workforce. Boy, I tell you, times have changed. General Motors, no longer number one. Toyota. Yesterday, Toyota became the leader in U.S. auto sales for the first time in, my gosh, like 80, 90 years. As recently as 2005, Toyota was number four in sales with GM, Ford, and what was then known as Daimler Chrysler all in front, with a combined 57% of U.S. sales between them. But last year, 2021, GM, Ford, and Stellantis, that's the European automaker that now owns Chrysler, had only 38% of the U.S. market between them in the first 9 months of the year. Even adding in Tesla only gets the U.S. automakers to just 40% of sales. Now, whether Toyota is able to keep the U.S. sales lead in the future, that's uncertain. Jessica Caldwell, executive director of Edmunds, and that's an organization that analyzes the auto industry. Very, very popular. Jessica said, I wouldn't expect Toyota to keep this lead. It's not like GM is doing something magical all these years. They just have more channels to sell in and more brands. And GM suggested they expect to be back in the lead very, very soon. Well, one of the big issues is the semiconductor shortage, which created an unprecedented set of circumstances last year, said the company. Even so, GM extended its lead in full-size pickups and SUVs, and 2022 begins with a gradually improving supply chain. So that should lead to growth later in the year. But the chip shortage, many are saying that's going to go probably for the entire year until they get that together. We had Scott Paul on the show a couple of days ago from the Alliance of American Manufacturing. He said that they've made some progress, but it's still slow because these companies, if you want to start a chip company, a semiconductor chip company, it takes years to bring up. And then you got this competition from China. But a little history here. GM took the top sales title from Ford back in 1927 and has been able to maintain its U.S. sales lead all the way through other tough periods. And that included 2019, when members of the UAW shut down GM for nearly 6 weeks. And then you got 2009, when GM was forced to file for bankruptcy, temporarily or permanently closing many U.S. plants, discontinuing its weaker brands, and shedding more than 1,000 dealerships. So the company has been through some hard times, and hopefully they'll be back, and especially with this electric vehicle market. Well, our U.S. Labor Department is still on a roll. Aluminum Shapes LLC will affirm a $1 million penalty and accept 10 willful, 15 repeat, and 55 serious violations, and one other than serious citation in a settlement agreement to resolve two long-running U.S. Labor Department Occupational Safety and Health Administration cases related to a fatality and a series of employee injuries at the company's plant in New Jersey. Company also agreed to implement enhanced abatement measures, including developing a comprehensive safety and health plan, retaining a full-time safety professional with demonstrated experience in lockout, tagout, and confined space compliance, and also adding more employee training. Regional Solicitor of Labor Jeffrey Rogoff in New York said, while the settlement can never reverse the senseless loss of life and serious injuries that occurred, it goes a long way in ensuring employer accountability and providing key worker protections to prevent future incidents. The agreement further demonstrates the U.S. Department of Labor's commitment to pursue every available opportunity to enforce safety laws. So once again, Marty Walsh and his team at the U.S. Labor Department standing for workers, as it should be. All right, quick break. When we come back, we're going to check in with Dan Segovia, iron worker in South Carolina. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one and join Dan Segovia. Dan is checking in from South Carolina at Ironworkers Local 848, ironworkers848.org. Dan Segovia, welcome to America's Workforce. How are we doing today, brother?
Good, man. Appreciate you having me on.
Well, I was reading your bio, and I see I sympathize with you, first off. Father of four daughters. I'm in the same camp, and just married off my second last one about 3 weeks ago. I got another wedding in five more months. So how old are your kids? Let me ask. Let's start there.
Yeah, well, you're a little bit ahead of me. So I have a 23-year-old, 24, 14 and 15. The oldest one's getting ready to get married, so I'm a little bit behind the gun on you, but I'm catching up slowly.
You're catching up. Well, you're still young. I mean, you're only 45 years of age, and I was reading your bio earlier on the show. So you actually, well, you grew up in Northwest Indiana, working in the railroad industry as a welder. What took you down to Charleston, South Carolina? Talk to me about that part.
Yeah, so I grew up there. I think I left in 97. So I left in 97, and I had a brother. Well, the plant that I was working in, it was a railroad repair shop, GATX, and they were closed down. So I had a brother that had moved to South Carolina with his family, and he got into Ironworkers, and I followed suit. And moved down here in 2001 and joined Ironworkers.
And he became, I see, the apprenticeship coordinator, recording secretary, president, and now you're the business manager as well as the secretary treasurer. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's been a long 20 years, but here I am, and got 10 more to go. So wish me luck.
Okay, good luck. Let's talk about the local. How many members in the local, and what's your jurisdiction? Are you all over South Carolina or what?
So most of it. I actually claim the Carolinas, but we do have some brothers from other jurisdictions that have some counties. So I have 110 counties roughly in North and South Carolina. big jurisdiction there. 1.5 counties in the northeastern tip of Tennessee.
Okay, you got a big territory there. How's the work right now? And I'm sure it's only going to increase here with the infrastructure bill that has become law. But what's the status right now, Dan?
Yeah, so work's been fairly good for us here in the Carolinas. It's Charleston. It has had a good amount of work. Charlotte, that's where most of our membership's based, around the Charleston area and the Charlotte. And then, you know, we like to try to venture out to, any area we can get to, but we expect Raleigh to be on up and up here soon. Well, they are now. So our membership right now is roughly almost 400 members, which is, for the jurisdiction, fairly small, but we are dealing with two right-to-work states here. In the past 3-4 years, we've increased our membership roughly about 200 members.
That's good. And if you can tell our listeners how difficult it is to organize in a right-to-work state, because it affects your bottom line, because you got workers in a union that are not paying their dues. But can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, for sure. So it's an everyday battle. We bring guys in, and guys are going out. So within the last 3 years, like I said, we've had roughly a 200 member increase. We've actually brought in close to 450 members over them 3 years. So that seems to be the way things have gone, in the history, is we bring these folks in When the job's done, a lot of them go back, jump ship and go back, you know, to whatever it was that they were doing before they joined up with us. So we're actually able to keep a little more this last go around because work has been fairly good. But, you know, just dealing with the mindset of the Carolinas and, you know, the politics and, you know, the right to work. You know, I heard you say on your podcast not too long ago about right to work, and who wouldn't think that's okay? I know when I moved down here and I heard, you know, my first time I heard right to work coming from Indiana, which I think is now a right to work state. I'm thinking, well, why wouldn't I have the right to work? Well, like you said, it's right to work for less if you really look at the
exactly. Yeah. How's your apprenticeship program doing right now, Dan?
So, it's, you know, it, like everything is doing better than it ever has. I think around 60-plus apprentices. I know when I was a coordinator in 2017, it was a struggle to keep, you know, 20, 30 apprentices. And we just had a place in Charleston at that time. But now we've expanded, opened a new facility 3 years ago in Charlotte. And just recently opened a bigger facility, a 9,000-square-foot training facility. So we'd like to think that we're doing better. The struggle is keeping these folks interested, you know, because if work slows down in Charleston and the work's in Charlotte, then these young folks got to go to this faraway area in our jurisdiction, you know, basically boom out in our own jurisdiction to make some money. So that's what we're trying to deal with and trying to, you know, make it right for the members.
Well, Dan, as you know, we have the infrastructure bill, which is now law. What are you hearing about the money coming into the Carolinas for that? I would imagine you got a preview of some of that. What's the story there?
So I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but, you know, we do expect a lot of money coming in for the roads and the bridges and just infrastructure. I know we have some work at the airport in Charlotte coming up, and because it is federal money, it will be covered under Davis-Bacon. So, you know, obviously prevailing wage doesn't apply to these two states, but when we can get a project that's federally funded, that's where we our contractors can really compete with the non-union and usually get the work. And I actually get a lot of calls from non-union companies who have to deal with the Davis-Bacon and on the military installations and whatnot through the two states that sign, you know, agreements or one job agreements usually, just because they know they have to pay the wages anyway. So that helps, and we do have the wage in a lot of the counties in the Carolinas.
So you get calls from the companies that normally aren't paying those Davis-Bacon wages. I mean, that conversation? What do they ask you? They say, "Well, you mean I gotta pay this amount? Is that how it works? Can you give me some details? What is that? Maybe you could explain that part to us."
Yes, a lot of times it's a struggle to get labor. And that's my main job is to find the labor for the contractors. So, you know, when I get them calls, I want to hear them. Hey, I need to get some boots on the ground, some help on these jobs. So when they bid these jobs and they win them, I guess they may have some issues with finding labor, and, you know, they're paying the rates anyways. So I guess in their mindset, they're thinking, hey, might as well call the union. We're paying their rates anyway, and that's what they're supposed to do. And, you know, we come through on a regular basis. So, and I like to try to keep them relationships alive the best I can for future work, and even try to go after them for, you know, some of the local work that's not covered.
Right. I understand there's a lot of offshore wind construction in that area off the coast of the Carolinas. Maybe you can get into that. And I would imagine some of that being funded by the new infrastructure bill.
Yeah, for sure. That's what, you know, it's another Davis-Bacon aspect where we're trying to get on board, get ahead of the game. So there's not a lot of construction at this point, but it's coming. North Carolina to start. I think Governor Cooper is looking at getting, you know, I think 8 gigawatts of power and over the next two decades. And I think it was 2.8 gigawatts by 2030. First project to be off the coast of North Carolina called a project called Kitty Hawk, and then the Wilmington area But if you're looking at the Bohm charts, that there's a lot of potential off the coast of South Carolina, which is still, that's really still up in air and tied up in political mumbo jumbo at this point. But we expect to get a lot out of it. I was actually recently appointed to the North Carolina Department of Commerce Offshore Wind Task Force with the help of our North Carolina AFL President, Mary B. She's been a really good champion for all of us, trying to get our seat at the table wherever we can have a voice. So the outlook looks really good.
When you talk about the politics, I assume that there's some people say, well, what do we need power from the wind for? Well, let's just drill for more oil. Is that the conversation that comes up down there?
Yeah. I mean, well, if you look at South Carolina, you know, off the coast of Myrtle Beach, there's a dip, you know, on the side of the United States there where there's a lot of wind, right? So, and then you got the local municipalities and local residents and who say, hey, we don't want this eyesore off the coast of this tourism spot, right? So,
yeah,
I think that, I think if we could have communications with these folks and get ahead of the game and let them know what this opportunity can bring to the local workforce, and even bring in a local workforce and give this area some good working men and women opportunities to have a career in a trade.
Yeah. Dan, is there any idea right now, maybe premature, of what kind of jobs can be created with offshore wind? And I know they're going up and down the Atlantic coast. I know there's a couple members in Congress that are really pushing, and I understand some of that is already in place. But do you have any assessment on what the future holds for work, especially offshore? If we get all the politics together, obviously we got some bumps in the road, but what are you hearing right now?
Sure. So there's, you know, years and years worth of work and the opportunity, like I said, for us to put add new members to all the crafts, you know, the IBW, the iron workers, operators. We have the ability to help supply the training, the workers. There's a lot of promise in the on the coast of the Carolinas where there's not a lot of construction going on, where we could bring in training opportunities and a more local workforce, and that'll actually help us tackle some of the other issues along the coast of the construction work that is going on with the rest of the trades.
Sounds good to me. Dan, I got to take a quick break here. Dan Segovia joining us on our live line. He comes to us from South Carolina. He's the business manager, financial secretary for Ironworkers Local 848. Website is ironworkers848.org. We'll continue the conversation with him later in the show. Dave Meginhardt will be joining us on behalf of the United Labor Agency. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our Raising Wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings, so keep them coming. Let's go back to South Carolina right now. Joining us on our live line is Dan Segovia. He comes to us from Ironworkers 848. Website is ironworkers848.org. You can also check them out on Facebook. Yeah, South Carolina, the least unionized state in America. I want to touch on that, but I saw this in your bio, and you know, Dan, there's a kid in us. We like to blow things up, I think, as kids. And I was reading about the demolition of the old Cooper River bridges in Charleston, South Carolina, where you put some charges in for multiple implosions. And I've seen these many, many times. You have an old building, you have to implode it, and you start all over. But it sounds like that was one of the highlights in your career. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so I was actually working down in Florida, and I got a call from my business manager back in 2006, and he said, hey, we have some, and I was making good money down there and living a good life, and he said, hey, we have some bridges to demo here in Charleston. And I said, heck yeah, and that day, I pulled the pin and come back to Charleston. So just to start with, you know, these type of projects are really dangerous. They're really critical, and it happens a lot to where a contractor comes in that doesn't really know what they're doing, and they fail in some sorts, unfortunately, and then they call in the real crew, the real iron workers, and that's what happened here. Was there was a death with a non-union company, and so they needed a legitimate iron working company to come in, and this was a demolition company. So we came in 2006, and we was able to set charges. So we get on the bridge and we pre-cut some holes to set the charges. And there's nothing to hold these things on except for rubber bands, and they're shaped charges. And we put them throughout the bridge, you know, different sections at a time, and get down on the ground, and at some point hit the button to let them go in the water. And there's actually a website called Unbuilding the Cooper River Bridges that highlights a lot of these bridges. These demolitions, implosions in Charleston. So it was really the best job I probably ever was on. You're out there in the good weather, up in the air, just living the dream. And it was, the iron workers I had with me on the job, you know, they're very good iron workers. And you got to be skilled to do this type of work because it is very dangerous. I remember when the first shot happened, or the first implosion, and the supervisor said, hey, you know, you guys stand clear. We was a good 1,000 feet away, he said, because, you know, shrapnel will fly. So I had one of them old flip phones, and I was taking a video, and you could see me duck behind the guy in front of me when the first implosion happened. But it was pretty cool. It was a pretty cool time.
Now, how long did it take to set that up? And you know, in an instant, it's done. But how long? How much prep went into that?
So a good 2 weeks each implosion. I think there was probably about 200 feet each section. And, you know, it was all engineered to where, you know, if you cut the bridge at a certain area, the rest of it would be cantilevered and hanging, you know, in midair. It would still be hanging when the implosion happened. So about 2 weeks, and then, you know, obviously a few seconds just to hit that button and go in the water. And then they had a rigging company come in and pull the steel out of the water.
Wow. Now, what did they do? Did they rebuild the bridge since then? I mean, that happened, 15, 16 years ago?
Yeah, so there was a bridge built before the demolition of the old Cooper River bridges. South Carolina, you know, low union density state. Unfortunately, we didn't get much of the work on, or any of the work on that new bridge. So I don't like to talk about it too much.
That's too bad. Yeah, yeah. Well, you had that crazy governor down there, Nikki Haley, and I talked about this on the show many, many times with Tommy Buffenbarger, who used to be the general president of the Machinists, and she's the governor that said, well, if you have a company that has a union, we don't want you in the state of South Carolina. You were there when she said that, didn't you? Weren't you there at that time?
Yeah, yeah, I was. I was. Yeah, I dealt with that firsthand. It's not something that a union person that makes a living or career off being union and getting the benefits and the career opportunity is not something we want to hear.
No. So what's the future hold for that area? I mean, is the climate still the same? A legislature is pretty far to the right, and you know, unions have a long, long way to go down there then?
So got a long way to go, you know. So with the Ironworkers 848, we're really making, I like to think, some headway. We're just really planting our feet, you know, firmly on the ground. And I think the biggest thing is getting the message out there to everybody and being partnered with the other trades and getting the message out there of what we do, what we can do, and what we're about. And, you know, I think that I think we're doing that slowly but surely. But it's going to be a long road ahead of us just to make headway. But like I said, I think Carolina, I know North Carolina, Charlotte has a lot of opportunity. I know Charleston does and Raleigh. But I think Charlotte, for us, you know, it's the 15th largest city in America. 100,000 people from being within the top 10. And just the infrastructure coming into the Charlotte area and the surrounding area and the projects, you know, that we see coming through Dodge and these other resources are just if we can get just a piece of that pie, and I know we will, we're going to do really good in the Carolinas.
Well, I want to salute you on what you've done. Well, obviously, organizing, it's difficult, but you're making some headway there, you know, step by step. But your website is awesome. Those of you listening right now, Ironworkers 848, if you can't go on there now, maybe later in the day, but mark that as a thing to do because there's a lot of really, really good information on organizing, how you can help organizing. Why we have unions, how employers prevent unions. I really like the part here about the 35 reasons to thank unions. I mean, paid holidays, 40-hour work week, workers' compensation, pensions, workplace safety standards. I mean, I could go on and on. And then there's the 35 things that your employer cannot do. A lot of people don't understand that. Employers will try to get away with murder in some cases, but it's all posted on that website. I don't know who did that, but man, keep it going. You get a lot of hits on your website. What's the story on that?
We do pretty good. I think that, like I said, it's about messaging. And if we can get folks to actually read all them points, they would understand. That's them are the points that we have to, the message that we have to get out there. So I think we do get a lot of hits. It is a very good, well put together website. And that's the mindset of Local 848 is get that same message in every avenue that we can get down.
Send it to all the members of the legislature. That might be an idea. Maybe if you find an email from Nikki Haley, you could send it to her, too. That's a thought. Dan, you're a great guest. I thank you so much for joining us here on America's Workforce. And I have to point out, we record the show from your brothers at Local 17 in Cleveland, Ohio. And Rich Jordan, business manager, says hi and says, he asked me if you know Jim Chop. Jim Chop, you know Jim?
Yeah, I know Jim. I've dealt with him. He actually did, I'm not sure if he's still involved. I'm pretty sure he is, but he does a business development for the Ironworkers and for our contractors in that area. He started here in the Carolinas helping me out. You know, he started in the Great Lakes, but actually when I first met him, he helped me out in the Carolinas doing business development. And this is a really good opportunity for our employers and a really good idea whoever came up with it. It was our impact organization that's affiliated with Ironworkers. So these guys they make contact on the industrial sector, you know, with the plants and managers and planners and whatnot. And they give our contractors try to get our contractors opportunities to bid on projects. So they're essentially a salesman. They work for us. They work for our contractors. And I know Jim's doing really good up in that area. We have a guy, Rusty Carter, in the Mid-Atlantic States. These guys are really changing the game for our contractors and for our organization to help them and us put more members to work and get iron worker hours on the board.
That's what it's all about. All right, Dan, you take care. Stay in touch with us. If you got any more blow-ups, let us know. I got to check that video. Is that video from the Cooper Bridge? Is that still posted?
Yes, it's a website, I believe, Unbuilding the Cooper River Bridges website.
I'll have to check that out. Okay, you take care, stay safe, and let's talk down the road, okay?
Thanks for having me.
Once again, Dan Segovia, business manager, financial secretary, and treasurer of Ironworkers 848. Do check out that website, ironworkers848.org. We're going to take a quick break. Dave Meganhart on behalf of the United Labor Agency coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two right now. Joining us is Dave Meganhart, Executive Director of the United Labor Agency, ulagency.org is their website, and also a proud sponsor of America's Workforce. Hey, Dave, Happy New Year to you, and how are we doing today, brother?
Happy New Year. I'm doing great.
Good. So how did the Unsung Heroes dinner go, which I was supposed to MC, but I had a little accident in home by tearing my hamstring muscle, which set me back a few weeks. But I'm hearing Len did okay. What's the
story?
Yeah,
Len did great. He's a born MC, and it went off well. You know, we had it at the Cleveland Museum of Art to kind of honor ULA's connection with the arts over the years and trying to, you know, not only turn on working people to the great resources of the community and the arts, but also have our stories told in the arts organization. So it was kind of a perfect, you know, a perfect venue for us for our 50th anniversary. And, you know, one of the people that we honored was Harriet Applegate, and who was a longtime president of ULA and the Executive Secretary of the North Shore Federation of Labor. And, you know, she's been a passionate advocate of ULA. I mean, she's just been great volunteer, couldn't have asked for a better board member. And while she's staying on the board, she's stepping down as president, and Dan O'Malley, who's the executive director of North Shore, is taking over. And so we took a moment to honor her, and we gave her the Ben Shouse. We call it the Ben Shouse Friend of the ULA Award, and it's it kind of recognizes somebody who has just done an extraordinary amount of work on our behalf. And and again, Ben Shouse was if those people remember him, you know, he's passed away several years ago, but He was, again, this fiery labor leader who had a real passion for the arts and, you know, was on every arts board in town and really took labor's voice to those venues to make the connection. So I think, you know, it's interesting and it's important that the stories of working people are told and their experiences, and the way we do that sometimes is through the arts. So, you know, we've connected with the museum in the past. You know, we ran before the pandemic, we were running a labor film series that would show, you know, every other month, where we would pick a labor themed movie and show it at the museum. And we've had, you know, we've been involved in some exhibits too, but I thought it was really a good thing. And I just want to take a moment too to recognize the other honorees, because, you know, this is just one last time. We have Rosa Cruz Morales from the Cleveland Teachers Union, mm-hmm. Candy Peters from Cardinal Education Association, Audra Jantz Oswald, Parma Education Association, Joseph Glover, AFGE, Local 3283, Rita Kennards, Workers United, and Wynn Antonio, who was with the American Federation of Teachers, but she's also done an amazing amount of work for the retired chapter and working with the North Shore Federation of Labor. So she's been just like an incredible advocate for labor. You know, and again, just all of these people, you know, they just go, they do their jobs and they show up and they make their union stronger. They help their brothers and sisters in the union. And, you know, we take that moment, and it was just, I mean, this is great venue. If people have been, you know, into the atrium of the art museum, it's just glorious architecture and beautiful. And fortunately we did do it before the latest surge of COVID. So it was safe. And it was just a great night. So all the, you know, just again, congratulations to all those people, and especially to Harriet, who I've just worked with for decades and keeping the ULA healthy. So
now I'm just getting angrier that I screwed up my leg and I couldn't be there, because it sounds like it was a really great night.
Good too. So
yeah, the food was good too. Well, that's important. right. No, it's a great event, and I'm honored to be the MC. I've done it for so many years, and it's so important that we call attention to the people behind the scenes, and that's exactly what this is all about. And it's good to hear that there are a lot, it sounds like, from the education field, because we need to educate people. It's so important to educate people about unions, educate about organizing. There's so many things that we need to do to bring up a middle class. So it's a great event. All right, let's talk about the work environment. I got some numbers that came out yesterday that the Great Resignation is still going on. 4.5 million people quit their jobs. This is across the country, which is 3% of the workforce. This was in November. And what I'm reading, and I'm sure you have some more details on this, it's primarily low-wage jobs, retail, leisure, healthcare. They're saying, you know what, I'm sorry, this ain't cutting it. And we have to point out that the minimum wage, the federal minimum wage, what was it? It's $7.25 an hour. It's higher in the state of Ohio, and many states have gone, you know, beyond that. Right. But it's like $7.25 nationally. It hasn't gone up since, what was it, 2009 or something like that?
Right. Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Now, it's 2000. So what's your answer to what's going on in America right now?
well, you know, if I had that answer, I probably would be able to make a lot of money. But I think, you know, the fascinating thing about it, right, is that that was just November's numbers, but you have to go back to July, and it's been pretty consistent that number of people have been resigning from their jobs. So this has like been record after record, month after month. So to give it, you know, it's hard for us to get like local data. So like we, you know, like a lot of the numbers are nationwide, and you know, they're generally from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. But locally, we have 60,000 less people working right now than when the pandemic started in March of 2020. So what and it's a very hard time to trying to get on what is actually happening. with that group of people? Like, what is it that, why are they dropped out of the workforce? Why have, and again, they have, they are lower wage jobs, but where have they gone? What is, how are they living and what are they doing? Because it's a pretty significant number. I mean, that's about 8% of the workforce in Cuyahoga County. It has sort of just disappeared, right? So there are factors in it, right? Obviously, the baby boomers are, you know, getting older, and we've talked a lot about a silver tsunami for a long time. And, you know, there's belief that the pandemic sped that up. So if you were close to retirement, you know, you went home or whatever, you start working from home, and you're like, you know, I'm just going to stay home, or this is my chance to make my move, right? So that has sped up. You have, I think, a lot of stress that people, of course, have had over time, you know, just with the pandemic. And, you know, if you're a frontline worker and you're going in every day, and you talked about the teachers, I mean, the teachers are truly unsung heroes, too, because, you know, they put themselves on the line to keep the schools open, and, you know, they were, you know, could be exposed at any time. So, like, so if you, you know, so I think there's that stress. And I think that, you know, people thinking about, like, do I really want to do this? Do I want to do this? When, like, it's a time to reset and then try something different. And because the labor market is incredibly tight, that there's just a lot of opportunity out there. Because if all these people are resigning, this, which just means there's a lot of shuffling going on too.
Sure.
So there's jobs everywhere, as everybody knows. And it's not just low wage work. It goes all the way up the chain, as far as, you know, middle skill, high skill jobs. There's just a lot of opportunity. So we're not, you know, so this year, you can really bet that this is going to continue as this sorts out. You know, this has been like an incredible disruption of the economy, as we know. And you know, how these things work, it takes time. It takes time to work out what actually is happening and then what actually is the result. And so, you know, we're still in the middle of it. We still think that we're, you know, oh, next quarter or next month, it'll make more sense. But as this kind of continues, as people just churn through jobs, we're obviously not near the end of the actual disruption. And, you know, so what we see on our end is, again, a lot of people come in. And I talked about this a couple of months ago, too. You know, we see a lot of people coming in trying to get upskilled, trying to get new skills to try to, you know, navigate that. And they've taken that time to work on themselves and, you know, position themselves more for the new economy. And, you know, so people, you know, that just, you know, how, you know, maybe they're living off savings. Maybe they realize they can live off one income. You know, and we talk about it too, like, it's not so much anymore, but throughout the past year, you know, one of the reasons that the labor market, I think, is being, you know, suppressed too, has been the uncertainty of schools. So if schools are going in and out, if they go remote, your kids suddenly, you know, at home, that has disrupted and certainly affected women. So you have all of these forces that are happening. You have all of this just kind of like churn, and you know, we're going to see it continue. I mean, this is like, you can very easily see it continuing through at least the first 6 months of this year. And that's depending on if the pandemic has, you know, quiet down at all, right? And or if it like comes back to some sort of normalcy, and or it becomes endemic, and, you know, we just learn to live with it. So we're in the middle of this giant surge right now, and, you know, it's just going to be the same.
To your point, yeah, the surge is changing everything right now, and until that dies down, we're not going to get even near normal. In the meantime, though, those of you listening, I want to drive you to the website, ulagency.org. I always say they connect people with employment. There's some good jobs out there, so you might want to check that out, ulagency.org. Dave, we're going to leave it on that note. You take care. We'll talk to you in 2 months, okay?
Okay, great. Talk to you then.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us and a member of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group.
find out more information online at labortools.com.